Welcome back to California Burning, made possible with funding from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. I'm Matt Fidler. This episode is all about learning how California's forested lands were managed before European settlement, and what we might learn about preventing catastrophic wildfires by understanding prescribed or cultural burns as practiced by the Native Californians. Native Americans, at one point or another, learned how to shape this land and use it quite productively for over 10,000 years. That's a pretty good track record. It became ingrained into their culture, and it stuck because these practices worked, and using fire was just one of those cultural practices. But today's society in the 21st century is obviously very different. And if we're going to bring back fire to the landscape, like what Margot Robbins and the Yurok are doing, it's going to have to involve more than just the native peoples of the area. Margot describes to me the first time they brought fire back to the landscape. It was just 7 years ago.
It was so awesome. It was inspiring and motivating. So we had planned for it, and finally the day came, and Cal Fire showed up, and the guys came from the Alder camp, and they're all lined up there in their orange suits. But as they was walking down the road to line up there in an orange suit so we could talk about why we wanted them to burn, to explain the cultural significance of it, I counted how many there were, because the motivation was find out how many they are, and that's how many local people we're going to train so that someday we can do this on our own.
With Cal Fire and qualified burn bosses overseeing the operation, the Yurok themselves held the propane torches that physically set the ground on fire.
And so the Yurok tribe was the only ones that had the propane canisters and torches. So they're the ones that put the fire down on the ground. And so I walked up into the middle of the unit and was just hoping somebody would not say I couldn't be there. And they never. And so I stood there as they put the fire down on the ground for the first time. And it was so amazing. And as the fire started to take off, you could just hear it like walking through the forest. It was awesome.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I could just hear it walking through the forest.
And now, 7 years later, with burns happening every year to just a bit more of the land, I can take a tour and see these burn sites to get a better understanding of the benefits that fire brings. Margot drives me up a steep mountainside to the side of a prescribed burn from a little over a year ago.
Over there. Mm-hmm. And this is the bottom of the unit that we burned. Now, when you look at it, you can still see that it's pretty brushy, but it has propagated the hazel. We can see some hazel right here, I believe. And we'll go in there, and cool. I'm going to put a clippers in your hand and put you to work, but... That's hazel right there poking
those
up
top
right
ones?
There. Yeah, right here, these short ones right here.
Are those just 1 year old kind of?
Yeah, they're about a year and a half because we burned here in the fall, not this last fall, but the fall before that. But our burn boss that we had for this particular area was from out of the area, and they're used to fire suppression. And so they was a little nervous to burn it as hot as we wanted. Thus, there's still quite
a bit of
brush here. Now, the burn that we just did that we'll look at here in a little bit, we had a local burn boss, and he's used to the lay of the land, the steep slopes, and has been doing prescribed burning for several years. And so we got a really nice, clean burn down there, and I'll take you down to see that, and so you can see the difference.
The hazel tree sprouts new shoots after the land burns, much like the oak trees in Forest Ranch, and a variety of other species that live in the fire-adapted forests in California. We drive up to some private property whose owners had let the tribe burn it to produce the hazel that they needed for baskets.
And we choose the places we're going to burn based on the cultural species that are on it. And so hazel is always one of the priorities. Another priority is prairie land, because our territory used to be about 50% prairie. and now it's less than 3% of what it once was. We used to have elk all around up here, but because there is no habitat for them, they no longer live here. So we want the elk to be able to come home, and so we are burning prairies, trying to reduce and get rid of the fur encroachment and turn those prairies back into prairies again.
She talked about encroachment of fir trees. That's the process of prairies being overgrown by aggressive trees like the Douglas fir. There used to be prairies and meadows sprinkled all throughout California's forests, giving places for game animals to thrive and multiply. But without being maintained, they have largely disappeared, along with the game animals that once lived in them. But today we aren't hunting large game. We're in the middle of a narrow window of time after a prescribed burn where the hazel stick collecting is good.
So yeah, it's about a 3 or 4 week window and we're in it right now. So you want to wait until the hazel is, the leaves are starting to open. The buds on the leaves are starting to open and that indicates that they will peel because we peel the bark off them and use them that way. But the fire actually changes the DNA of the plant. And so it's stronger and more flexible. And it also gets rid of the bugs that will sometimes eat into the plant. So you can make the hazel send up new shoots by cutting it, but it's not as good as if it's burned.
So we get out and start collecting shoots that Margot can weave into a baby basket for her granddaughter, who's expected to be born in a few months.
Can I help you
pick some hazel?
Yeah.
I don't want to be a bum and not do anything.
I should have brought my knife too.
I have a little pocket knife. It's not very big, but...
We're standing on the edge of a burn line here. One side was burnt last year, and the other isn't. Well, we don't see any burn marks on either side. Margot can easily see which side was burnt based on how the hazel looks.
Hazel, and so this bush right here is outside of the fire line, so it hasn't been burnt, so you can see all the limbs coming up off of it, and it may have hazelnuts this next year or so. I don't know. They don't produce as well as they used to. So that's what they look like when they're not burned.
We're not going to make, you wouldn't want to make baskets out of this because it's...
You can't.
Oh, it's too...
You can't. Okay. So this is what we make baskets with. See this one coming straight up? This is what we make baskets with. And so it's always important to be respectful of what you gather, which reminds me I have picked 2 sticks and didn't even thank the sticks for giving themselves. So I'm just going to, do that, but not out loud. Okay, then.
Basket-making materials are one of the most common products that cultural burning produces, but there are many beneficial species of plants that come from burning, depending on where you live. Here, in the midst of a somewhat recent burn, I ask Margot if she can point out some of the plants that have benefited from this fire.
As I stand here and look, I see pepperwood right here. Pepperwood is a tree. Some people call it California laurel or bay. It's good for arthritis and rheumatism and stomach problems and just lots of things. It has nuts on it too. And like the nuts, you can eat them and they're really healthy. But also if you pound them up and make them into a paste, they'll heal wounds that are infected and wouldn't normally heal. Even MRSA. Yeah. So.
Is it fragrant, the leaves?
Oh, yeah.
Is it like the bay, laurel and Bidwell Park where I live? Oh, yeah, very strong. Yeah.
So, and here's a bigger one right here. And then this here, down here, is soapwort. And so soapwort will get rid of the root, will get rid of poison oak. And then also you can use it to make a little brush to clean baskets or mushrooms.
Is this fire propagated as well, or...?
I do believe it benefits from fire. So there's lots of plants that benefit from fire, and some are actually fire dependent, like the hazel.
This is why learning the local ecosystem is important when using fire. Done right, fire encourages native species and can help get rid of invasive species. If done wrong, you might kill the native species while invasives like Scotch broom and Spanish wheat thrive. The Spanish wheat is why California's hills are so poetically golden. But they aren't native. And that's why they turn golden brown in the summer. They're dying. And they grow over the entire landscape with no space between the plants, which means they spread fire easily. And it's a big part of what carried the campfire between where it started, across the huge Feather River Canyon, and into the town of Paradise. And it did this in about an hour. The grasses native to this area, which only about 1% remain in California's grasslands, are evergreen with deep root systems that make them drought resistant. They also grow in bunches, so if one plant catches, it doesn't necessarily spread to the next.
Non-native grass species have taken over, as well as even more than that is star thistle. So star thistle is another one that apparently there's a certain time period in its growth cycle that if you burn it then, it'll get rid of them. And I can't remember exactly when that when is, but I am going to look it up and put it down someplace where I don't have to remember. I can just look.
Even when you do burn at the right time, it can take several growing seasons to replace the star thistle with native grasses. Another benefit to fire that helps with the wildfire problem has to do with helping sustain the groundwater supply.
There's a direct connection between fire and water. The place that we burned 2 years ago, so thick with brush. And I was showing the place to, it was actually the guy from National Geographic came to talk to us about fire. And so we were standing there at the edge of the road looking up at the unit. It was late summer, end of summer, dry time of season. And I looked down and there was water in the ditch. Never see water in a ditch in that time of year. But uphill from us was about 80 acres of where we had burned. And being as all that brush wasn't there, sucking up the water, it increased the water table. Also, when you burn and it leaves charcoal on the ground, and you stop and think of what the water purifiers use, charcoal. Yeah, and so we are creating a landscape of water purifying habitat.
It's like you burn and you're creating a Brita.
Yeah.
Filter.
Yeah, exactly. A giant Brita filter.
Keeping that charcoal in the ground is basically sequestering carbon, keeping it out of the atmosphere, and contributing to the overall health of the soil, creating a healthier forest. But you might say, by lighting fires, we're creating smoke, right? Yes, but much less than the larger fires that we're preventing with these low-intensity burns. Plus, wildfires often burn homes and cars, spewing toxic chemicals into the air and water. You're listening to California Burning, a co-production of North State Public Radio. I'm Matt Fidler. We're going to take another quick break, and when we return, we're going to hear from Valentin Lopez, the chairman of the Amamutsan people of Santa Cruz, about the mandate his people have to be the caretakers of the land and everything that resides on it.
This indigenous knowledge was passed on generation after generation for well over 15,000 years. And if you think of that in terms of generations, that's 800, 900, perhaps 1,000 generations or more.
Stay with us.